Ideas excite me.
What doesn't excite you?
Exercising. Honest to God, yesterday I put on all my exercise clothes. I was ready, shoes, everything. And I was like at the front door and I was just like, I literally just cursed and was like, screw all of this. And I just like went back and just like laid around and ate potato chips.
Sometimes that's enough. That can count. You got your, you got all, everything on, you got to the door. That's enough.
No, it's not. Oh. My heart. Tell that to my heart.
Adam's heart. Sometimes that's enough.
Oh, thank you. You looked right at my heart and said that. That was so sweet. My heart's like,
I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I think I'd like to go for a run occasionally.
Yeah, I've been meaning to speak to you about putting cigarettes into your heart. Yeah, I had that
cannula installed.
It's not good. And
chest
the
cannula.
When you don't have one in, the spurting the blood that comes out, it messes up some shirts.
Sorry, I put a cork on there. Put a little cork, a little plug.
They have that, the wine, like the corkscrew that.
Solution today, heart cannulas with their own corks. So that your heart can smoke.
I feel like heart doctors are the ones who need to deliver the heart surgery solutions. I don't have enough heart doctoring in my background.
I know, me neither. But I mean, we're not an expert podcast, right? We don't know.
Maybe we are the best heart surgeons that have ever lived. We don't know because we haven't tried. It's not impossible.
That's true. It could be that you just are like
a natural.
Yeah, a natural.
I'm just a phenom. I'm a cardiovascular surgeon phenom. Who I'm just like, I just don't know. My hands just knew what to do as soon as they got inside of someone's chest cavity. I just knew.
That's a good superpower. That could be like a Marvel or X-Men that we have never heard of yet. Like,
it takes a lot of trust to get someone to demonstrate.
How would you find out that you had that? You're like, if you had that superpower.
I swear to you, I have this power. But how did you find it out?
Tell me the origin story of this superhero.
That's a boring thing. You don't want to know.
It's not boring. It's the first time you accidentally performed heart surgery. It must be like an accident, right?
What small child doesn't stumble upon like a person with an open chest cavity needing some sort of high-level surgery?
Maybe it's just exactly the origin story of Batman, but instead of the parents dying, the boy like grabs the knife from the criminal and just does open heart surgery and saves his mother and father's lives.
Yeah, like the gun, the bullet just barely misses something vital, and he's like, I know what to do.
I know what to do. I can do this.
And that starts.
And then he just like does open heart surgery, and then it's like swelling music and just his boyish bloody hands going up towards like the sky.
Then we have this Tim Burton movie called Doctor Man.
Yeah, Doctor Man. This would. Wait, we're supposed to have a solution. Let's go in. Let's do this.
Let's do it. We're recording.
Let's do it.
Welcome, everybody.
Yeah, welcome.
Midway in.
Everybody, thank you so much for listening. This is Solutions from the Multiverse. This is the podcast where every week we share a totally new idea that it may not be totally new, but it's way out of the mainstream. Like, this is a very, very off the wall, preposterous. Someone said, preposterous ideas.
You're not going to run into these if you're not listening to these. You're not going to run into these in your daily life.
No, never. Right. These are new ideas. Think of it like old school TED. This podcast is like old school TED, where you actually heard a new idea every time you turned on a TED.com video. Now it's just like, it just says things that are kind of obvious when I listen to TED Talks.
I think there was a switch where it went from being like a super prestigious thing to like they just kind of franchised it, and there were like lots of satellite things and lots of different levels, and the brand just kind of became mixed up where it was like, I don't know, it's all TED.
I can tell that story. I want to tell it on a different episode,
though, okay?
Because I have deep knowledge of this.
Because I
did TEDx's before. I organized them. But anyways, so this is a podcast about totally fresh ideas about and the problems are old, but the solutions are new. So today.
What do we got today?
Okay, here's the solution. Here's the solution. There's been a lot of changes to language recently.
Okay.
Much of the vanguard of political activism and social activism has been around language. I think that we should introduce some language for talking about wealth and poverty with the same accuracy and the same sort of insistent, vehement insistence that we see language insisted upon in other sort of areas, we should insist on accurate language around wealth and poverty as well.
Okay.
So I'll present three words that could be the beginning of this vocabulary that we kind of develop. And that's, instead of saying the poor, the working, the middle class, the working class, the upper middle class, the wealthy, the rich, instead of saying any of those, you just say three, there's just three simple buckets. The precariat, the salariate, and the owners.
The precariat, the salariate, and the owners.
Yeah, precariat. Yeah.
I feel like I have a better grasp on one of those than the other two. I'm not going to tell you which of the three. I'll let that be your little guess. But
the English word.
Let's pretend
the one
like
that's English I need already. All.
Okay, you found me out. You got it.
Oh, damn it.
So what are precariat and...
Precariat. Precariat, like precarious.
And what was the second one?
Salariate.
Salariate. Precariat and salariate. What are those?
So just, they come from the words precarious and salary, right?
Okay.
So the people in the precariat are people who are precariously, economically, they're precariously positioned. So that generally means people who are tip workers, gig workers, hourly workers, day workers. They have no paid vacation. They have no benefits. You know, waiters, Uber drivers, you know, people clean houses, you know.
They probably also don't have like a large financial cushion in case of calamities
Very
or
unlikely.
Catastrophes.
Yeah, they're probably underinsured.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so that's the precariat.
Right. And then the salariate are people who have salaries. They generally have paid days off, paid vacation, you know, paid sick days. They have
benefits
dental, healthcare maybe, you know. And that's like the salariate. And then there are the owners, which are people who just own things and they don't have to work because the things they own make enough money for them. They may work in the sense that they have to sort of manage what they own, but they don't actually work in the sense that they, you know, actually...
They're not providing the labor that they're profiting
They're not getting paid for the labor. They're just getting paid because their property makes money. You know, maybe they own a bunch of McDonald's or they own a bunch of homes or a bunch of buildings or they own a bunch of stock and they're stockbrokers or they own, you know, or
they're owners.
Yeah, there's owners. They own a bunch of stuff and that stuff grows 8% a year or 20% a year. And they,
if you own a football team, you're not playing the game every week, but you are benefiting from that team. You know, you're doing some sort of labor, but you're definitely not, I wouldn't stack you at the top of who's doing the most labor for this organization.
Right. It's not the labor that makes your money. It's because it's the fact that's by dint of owning it that you have your money.
Yeah.
So if we talked about society this way, I think a few things would happen. One thing is, I think it's kind of demeaning to call people poor.
Yeah.
It's also incorrect historically speaking, because like even like the poorest person in our society, who just like sits and panhandles, like let's chronically homeless person sits and panhandles. They can panhandle and get like, even if they get 20 or 30 bucks, they can go buy things that a prince of Persia could never buy, right? Like even the poorest people actually have resources just by just because they're in our society.
Right.
And I'm not trying to lessen their experience. I'm actually in favor of eradicating poverty completely. But I think it's just strange to call them the poor when they're really just human beings, first of all.
Sure.
And so, yeah, it's just, I think it's a bad label. It's the same way that illegal alien is a bad label because it like lowers them as a human being into this weird thing. Instead, we say quite accurately, you know, undocumented immigrant. It's like, that's great. Well, the same thing should be done in terms of our discussions of poverty and wealth.
Well, because poor is also a bucket that's so vague that that's not a thing that you could easily get out of. Like, where's the level where you go from not being poor or from being poor to not being poor?
Right.
Yeah. You're not going to see that line. But
if
you've defined it differently, maybe there's a different line. Yeah.
Well, you go from the precariat to the salariate.
Right.
For sure. You know, you're going to go from, I have no benefits and I could be fired at the drop of a hat. Like they could just let go. Just say, well, you were cleaning my house. Now don't clean my house. You would get nothing. You would just be gone the next, you know, like you just immediately lose everything.
Maybe the following week has a holiday in it. So it's only 4 days. And if you're in the precariat, now you get paid for 4 days worth of work for that week. if you're in the salariate, you get paid a regular week. The
same amount.
No matter if it's a holiday or not.
And if your kid's sick, you can just leave and you still get paid the same. But if you clean houses and your kid's sick, then you get paid less that week, which that's the week you needed more because your kid was sick, right?
Yep.
So there's an inherent, like when you start to paint it really, use really accurate language, the reality starts to come forward really clearly to you, you know? So I think a lot of people get down on like political correctness. And I think there is something to that because of what could be called a politics of damage and a politics of deprivation. So if you're advocating if you're engaging with the world and you're labeling everyone and framing everything as what damages everybody has had and what problems they have, and that's how you're then treating, that's the most important part of their life and the most important part of their identity. No one's going to respond positively to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not a positive way to think about the world, right? Because people who don't have any money or who are part of an underserved minority, they also have aspirations about their life, and they perceive their life not enough. People don't perceive their lives as damaged.
Sure.
People perceive their lives positively as like what their aspirations are and what they have achieved.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with criticisms of kind of political correctness. At the same time, I think it's important to use language that's very accurate.
Yeah.
Because it kind of makes the scales fall off your eyes about the way the world works.
And certainly useful. I mean, language is always evolving. It's one of the things about it. And it's evolving based on what's useful and what's needed. You know, like language doesn't usually get created for funsies. Like it's a utilitarian thing that we're using language to communicate. And so when the language we have isn't adequate, that's the time to start either changing it up or adding new things or using terms in different ways. And that's what we see happening over and over again. And I think you're right. The idea of like middle class,
what does it mean?
It's a word without a definition anymore. Right. It used to have a definition and then got diluted. And now it doesn't really mean anything. Same with poor. Like what does that mean?
Also, if you go even back another 100 years, proletariat, like we don't have a proletariat. In our society, it doesn't make sense. You could say working class. You could even be like a unionized factory worker. You're not a proletariat. You have a freaking iPhone. You know what I mean? Like the proletariat in the 1800s were like literally every day got up and worked in steel mills every day, all day long. That was their whole lives.
Yeah.
That's different than someone who works at a unionized factory and has good benefits. Actually, they're members of the salariate, right? Because they're going to have good benefits.
Sure.
When you said
precariat and salariate, proletariat is what came to mind. The proletariat, bourgeoisie.
Yeah,
is that right.
Yeah, okay. The bourgeoisie.
From like
back in the day.
Yeah,
yeah.
Soviet communism, socialism. Oh boy, my history is gonna fail me here. But yeah, that's what came to mind.
Scott's and so history this is podcast. That's what we're turning into here. thing is communism.
Back in the time, there were isms, and then and then fast forward till today.
Well, let me just wave my hands a little bit, and then now this is what it is.
Whatever. I'm gonna go read my Dr. Man comics. You leave me alone.
Yeah, Dr. Man. Sir, you can't wear a cape in the OR. Watch me.
I'm Dr. Man. I can't let someone operate on me who is hiding their identity. It's a personal thing.
I really want to see Dr. Man punch someone in the face and have it go pow, and then that knocks them out so he can do surgery on them.
He's like, I'm a vigilante in that if I accidentally mess up and kill a patient, I can just vanish and nobody can come track me down.
That's right. No malpractice insurance for Dr. Man.
That's his secret power. He can kill patients without having to suffer.
We need Dr. Man.
Wait a minute.
Dr. Man is highly fraught. He killed multiple people. But he's a vigilante. Sometimes he has to kill people, but it's okay.
If only there had been a child who had been the victim of a terrible like parent orphaning and not seen that and decided to become the world's best doctor, but instead decided to dress up like a bat and fight crime and punch people instead. That person would fight Dr. Man.
So Batman, Bruce Wayne, definitely owner class.
Owner class.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Salariate would be like, Harvey Dent.
Do elected officials fall into the salariate? I guess so.
Yeah,
because
they have
benefits and some of the best healthcare.
Yeah. And I think they only work like 4 months out of the year usually, right? Like the Congress is like in session only, like very little time.
So would this be, this could be a thing because it is very, it's defined by your vocation or by your employment. Yeah. It's a thing that if you were going to implement it, because I always try to think, I'm like, oh, in an implementation situation, how does this work? And so I think, yeah, you would just have to like, it would become maybe a box you check on a tax form or something where you start identifying I'm in the precariat or the salariat.
I was thinking it should be initially should be like kind of the way people are like enforcing language change around like trans issues, right? People are like, oh, you should really use the right pronouns.
Yeah, right.
You should really, which I completely agree because again, accuracy, etiquette, like it's a great thing. And so it's not just like a politics of damage, right? That's like a positive form of change in language. So I think we could do the same thing. You know, if you see, if somebody is like saying like, oh, the poor, the poor, the poor, the poor, you can be like, you know, why don't we change our verbiage there and just call them the precariat? Cause it's actually more accurate. The poor makes them sound like they're these like, you know, charcoal covered faces, you know, children with no shoes on, you know, it's like they're people.
Yeah.
They're part of our society. They can vote. They're citizens. They're, you know, like
it does feel like it removes the agency and it becomes this group that needs to be taken care of instead of a group of individuals with, you know,
and they're in a precarious economic situation.
Uh-huh.
And actually, given the way America works, you might end up being in the precariat too someday. Because, you know, there's varying levels of economic precariousness. Mm-hmm. Even people in the salariat often feel quite precarious, right? They feel like they might lose their home or they feel like they might lose their job.
Mm-hmm.
And then even owners, you know, I've seen interviews from a younger Bill Gates. He was already like a billionaire, but he was like sweating bullets talking about how he might lose his money. I was like, get the hell out of here. You're going to lose your money. You're like a billionaire, you know?
Yeah.
But even the wealthiest people can think about things in terms of risk and precarity. So I think to call people the precariat who have more precarious situation is just accurate. It's just like, yeah, they're precariously situated. And then it becomes so clear what to do to help the poor. Make their situation less precarious.
Yeah.
That's the solution, right? That's basically, so now you don't have to say, oh, we're trying to end poverty. It's like, you're just trying to end economic precariousness.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what we want to get rid of.
Which is always, I'm always in favor of lifting the floor, right? Like that helps everyone. It may not be something you notice directly because you might not be on the floor, which is wonderful, but lifting the floor helps everybody.
Yeah, especially breakdancers.
We have to clear the floor first.
Clear the floor.
Then kind of maybe wax it, shine it, get it all spinny.
Yep. Or tap dancers. I'm just kidding. Economic precariousness. And that also makes it so then people aren't like, it reframes, I mean, language is so powerful because it reframes then all your conversations about poverty, all your conversations about reform, about welfare, about anything. Because you stop saying like, oh, it's entitlements. Oh, it's handouts. Oh, it's huge precariousness. We're going to implement something so that precariousness goes away, right?
Yeah.
Like instead of saying, oh, we're just going to give people money, we're going to give people something that they're in, like, yeah, this idea of entitlements. It's like, no, you know what Norway says is they call Norway, the way they frame their social welfare system is they call it the land of second chances. So they don't frame it as, oh, you get free stuff or you get, you know, the government's going to shell out for you to get free stuff. Instead they say, you know, life is going to throw a bunch of risks at you. Mm-hmm. Some of those aren't going to turn out well. And in this country, we have second chances. You can endure those risks going the wrong way for you. In America, we just call it the land of one chance, right?
Yeah,
just
right.
Like, just like Hamilton.
If that, sometimes Hamilton, you're born right? into I'm not the land of no chance. Chance.
Yeah, no chance. Depends on what zip code you live
yeah,
in.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. But at Hamilton, right? I'm not going to miss my shot. Eminem said the same thing, right? Like you get one shot.
One shot, yeah.
And it's kind of like, that's America. America is the land of one shot. And sure, if you get your shot and the risks turn out in your favor, you can hit it big, maybe. But everybody else, it's just one shot.
Right.
And that's just not a good way to run a civilization.
No.
Multiple shots. Actually, the wealthy get many shots. The wealthy get as many shots. I should say, you know, the owners, same as the wealthy.
Yeah, well, if you have the resources to keep rolling the dice, you can roll them and that works out better for you. But if you only have the resources to roll them once,
right.
Oof, that's a high risk thing and that can turn out bad.
Yeah.
I think it does help to define this and to kind of make it more empowered. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like the proletariat sounds like a thing where it's a group that you need to consider and a group you need to worry about the ramifications of ignoring. And that doesn't, like, poor doesn't feel like it has those ramifications anymore. Right, right. That feels like a thing where you're just like, eh, we'll ignore it. And maybe some people will get to it if they are like kind-hearted people and everyone else is like, that'll be on the bottom of the thing. Because those are you know, I'm a person who's trying to deal with my constituents and those people are not the people who are getting my attention as much because I'm driven by money. And that's specifically what's
they don't
lacking
have.
In the poor.
So in a way you're saying, I'm hearing you too also say that precariat is a way of almost speaking about that group of people in a more powerful way politically.
I think so.
It's like, shit, don't mess with the precariat. They can show up. They can vote. They can do things to make your life a lot harder.
Like you're saying, if you're just talking about poor, someone can defend, depending on if it suits the person or not, they can be like, you're not poor. I'm not talking about you. Or you are poor.
Talking about you. There's always that. Around. Yeah, no, you're in the middle class. And it's like, you're struggling.
I'm trying to help the poor. And then later on down the line, you find out, they meant someone who's not you.
Exactly.
You thought they
it's
meant
unclear.
You.
And that
this
happens,
is like, defined. And this is like,
it's categorical one way or the other. There are some, I will say there are, I think, as I think about it, and we're talking through it and, you know, we're not experts and we kind of talk things through here and we kind of uncover stuff. There are salariate people who like own their home and they have a 401k with, you know, $100,000, $200,000 with stocks. Mm. And they then retire. And when they retire, hopefully if you retire, you become an owner, right? Like you live off your 401k.
Yeah.
And then, but then you get your Social Security, which is basically kind of like saying that's like you're part of an owner of America. Almost, right? It's kind of the America citizens dividend, but we only give it to old people, you know?
Yeah, it's the idea is you've paid into it
throughout
your
life,
and so now you're cashing out. But the reality is you're not getting the exact money you put in. That money's already been given out, and it's just a continual
thing. What I'm trying to say is there's members of the salariate who own a home, maybe own two homes, right? Now, when do they become owners? And then the same thing with the precariat, you know, you could be like, I'm in the precariat, but I'm a consultant and I work gig to gig and I have no benefits, but I make like $350,000 a year. Right. So now you technically have no benefits and no days off, no paid days off because you're a consultant, you're paid hourly, but you charge $500 an hour.
It makes up for it in that.
Yeah. So there are sort of some gray areas, but I think it's kind of like, what did that judge say about pornography? I know it when I see it. Like if you say, I make $350,000, I have no benefits, I'm in the precariat, you'd be like, no, you're not. You're clearly not. You know. And if you said like, I own my home, but I work every day as a salaried worker and I have a 401k, no one would say you're an owner. It's like, no, you're just a salaried person who has a nest egg. And you own your home. You're not like, I own 50 homes and I rent them all out and I just chill at the best one, which is like what an owner does, right? That's like the way an owner lives their life.
Yeah. And you like if in your scenario, if you're that high making precariat, you don't like show up at a meeting with a lot of fast food workers.
Right.
And they're
say,
talking
how do we
about
make things better.
They're talking about things that concern them. And you're like, and also, what about people that own two houses?
Yeah, totally.
We need to consider those people. You're not in the right room.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And this also frames the unionization efforts better. So when you talk about joining a union, in a lot of cases, you're moving from, like you're eliminating precarity. Mm. Precariousness. Precarity? Precariousness. So like economic.
Precariosity?
So this, you can reframe economic growth instead of saying we're going to make more stuff, which isn't economic growth, because that's garbage. That's just going to destroy the environment and make everybody's basements full of crap they don't actually need. And you're not trying to just raise GDP, because you can like Raytheon can make a $60 million bomb. The American government can buy it and they can drop it on someone. And that's GDP going up. That's insane.
Right.
But if you say economic growth is reducing economic precariousness, now you've got something. Now you've got something that you can lean in and say, yeah, let's make unlimited economic growth. Let's grow the economy as much as possible. Because when I say grow the economy, I mean reduce economic precariousness.
you're strengthening the fiber of the economy.
Yeah. And you could even say, yeah, we're going to reduce economic precariousness. We're going to build, you know, like they just did NASA, that DART system that actually moved an asteroid to that could someday be used to prevent an asteroid hitting Earth. In a way, that's reducing economic precariousness. That should be considered massively like an economic development, I think, because it reduces the precariousness of life, you know, of at least human life and or life on the Earth. But anyway, so thinking about it, anyways, when we start to change the language, I think it has all these really interesting ramifications. We start to think about the way we're going to create policy differently. We start to think about power differently, the way you said. We actually start to think differently about what it means to be in economic growth. And also, I think we just change our own value of ourselves. Because a lot of people in America think they're in the middle, think they're in the upper middle class. Have you ever seen this statistic where 70% of Americans think they're in the upper middle class?
I have seen, yeah, that people think it, yeah.
And they're wrong. They're not, you know, because there's only like 20% of Americans are in the upper middle class, right? So, but if you said this way and people would actually honestly be able to say, oh, I'm clearly in the precariat. And then they'd have to be like, oh, wow. And now they're going to start having some class solidarity with other people in the precariat.
Because I have seen that before where they like, they'll give people a blank graph and be like, draw what you think the income distribution in the U.S. is or whatever. And then they show the real one and they're like, whoa, it is way more top heavy.
Right.
Like, you know, it's concentrated over here on this one, on the wealth side with few people and nobody over on this side has anything to work with.
Yeah. There's interesting like solidarity issues with this that come up too. Not issues, but I think great things. Like, for example, if you just graduated from college, and maybe you're like from a salariate family background and you go to college and you graduate from college and you're like trying to start your career as a freelance graphic designer. If this language was around and you knew it, you'd be like, I'm in the precariat, which is weird because your whole life you would have grown up as a child in a salariate family. And so you would actually be able to say and to show whatever, what is really known, if you look at the data now, which is that the generation that is alive now is poorer than the generations before.
Yeah.
Right. And that's exactly that if your parents were salaried and now you graduate college and you're a gig worker, that is the class shift of you going down the class ladder. But if we just say middle class, then you're like, well, I'm an aspiring graphic design, a freelance graphic designer.
Yeah, I'm probably still in
and
there,
I made $40,000 last year. Maybe next year I'll make $60,000. Well, I'm the same class as my parents. I'm a middle class. And it's like, no, you're not, because you have a huge, you carry a huge amount more economic precariousness. If you get sick, if your kid gets sick, if anything happens, you have to bear that burden and you're going to stop working. You're going to stop getting paid.
Yeah.
You know? So I think it really helps to, it brings into reality these things that right now just live in kind of numbers and you hear them and you're like, holy shit, what? Like, oh, that's crazy to hear. But it would bring it into the real world if that's how journalists and everybody talked about wealth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be, I feel like there's just not as big a stigma. Like there's not a stigma to the idea of precariat as there is to like poor or lower class.
Right. No one ever wants to say, oh, I'm like, low class. You know,
I'm a member of the low class. Oh, really? Yeah. Are you? That seems weird. I don't hear people say
no
that.
No one says that.
But, you know, but I'm a member of the precariat because
I'm a gig worker.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of it because I serve your coffee and I clean your house and all that work has dignity, but it is rewarded with this huge precariousness.
Yeah.
It's rewarded inequitably.
But we aren't hiding that fact. We're not like pretending like it doesn't exist, which is what is so obnoxious sometimes when everybody understands the reality of something, but nobody wants to say it because it's not cool to identify it or whatever. That's this just kind of puts everything on Front Street, which I like.
This also, gosh, a whole nother aspect to this that is just coming to me now is like political analysis, right? People say like, oh, the suburbs went for Biden, right? Oh, these political analysts are always grasping at ways to sort of slice up the population. And sometimes they do it by income level, right?
Right.
Or they do it by, you know, education level or where they live, you know, suburban, urban, you know, rural. But I wonder what would come out of an analysis of did the precariat, who did the precariat vote for? Who did the salariat vote for? And who did the owners vote for, and or who did they donate money to, right?
Because I feel like the owners pay money to not have that information about themselves revealed. But that would be the fight.
But wouldn't that be interesting to say, like, oh, the battle between Biden and Bernie was absolutely the battle between the precariat and the salariat. Not the young and the, it was partly the young and the old as well, but it was mostly, I believe, and I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me because, again, this analysis hasn't been done because this is a new idea that I've never heard anyone say.
Yeah.
But I believe that Bernie was he was the president of the precariat.
Oh yeah. I don't think that's a stretch.
At least the precariat, the way that we're defining this.
Yeah.
And then Biden was on the Democrats, obviously not of the necessarily the Republicans, but I bet even a bunch of independents who a lot of the independents are in the precariat. Mm. I just wonder, it would be, I don't know exactly, but I wonder what would shake out if Nathan Fielder. No, that's the funny guy. No, the guy who does the stats.
Oh, Nate Silver.
Nate Silver. What if Nate Silver got his teeth into this and was like, which, you know, let's do this definition. You know, you're precariat, you're salariat, you're owners. Okay. Who supports what? That would be really fascinating to me.
The most unsurprising detail would be that, you know, how every cycle there's sometimes like a billionaire or two that pop into the race who is like, I'm funding myself. I'm not a billionaire. Like, oh, you're a billionaire. Okay. You know, that would be the owner. Like the owners.
Yes,
are like,
the owner.
Yeah, we like Bloomberg for some reason. I don't know what it is. Oh, he's a billionaire. Oh, interesting.
I don't know. Sometimes the billionaires are really populist. Like last time there was two, there was that guy who had like a nice, you know, he had a nice kind of 1990s haircut. And then there was Bloomberg. And even Bloomberg, like I didn't hear rich people backing Bloomberg. That was just Bloomberg backing himself. Tom Steyer. He was really like almost like, he was almost like a kind of cleaned up Bernie-crat. Like he was like, we should make healthcare like more available. And we should like have an industrial plan for the United States. And
he had like a friendly uncle vibe.
Yeah. I actually liked his politics. I mean, he seemed like a fake. He was a faker, you know. But he just wanted to be president. It was an ego trip.
I mean, on the path to collecting $1 billion, I just have so many questions. I'm like,
where are the bodies buried?
I don't know that you can do that clean. I want to know.
Oh my God.
I don't know.
I mean, I'm sure you can't, but I mean, you can't become president of the United States clean either.
No, that's very true.
I mean, I guess Bernie did it, but
he did not become president of the United States.
Well, you know what I mean? Like you can't become that close.
Sure.
But maybe Bernie did it some other way.
I was like, were you aware of a different election than I was?
I'm not aware of an alternative universe. I actually swap with other atoms in other universes through the multiverse portals that we use to do this podcast.
You haven't been coming up with any of these items.
No, it's always a different atom.
You're just getting emails.
Every time it's a different atom who shows up and says, hi, Scott. Oh, hey.
I feel so lied to.
And I just bring
right
two
now.
Ideas from my universe and I just go back to the other one.
You're replying, this is great. He'll never know this isn't my idea.
I show up one time I have an eye patch, show up the next time I have only one arm, show up the next time I have like is this still
you have a crazy French accent?
Yeah, like I am
still the same Adam. What do you mean?
Cook everything in butter and white wine. That is my idea.
I'll be like, there's something different. I just can't put my finger on it.
What is going on?
Oh well, let's have this white wine.
I can't figure out any other angles to think about this language thing, but I think it's important though, because here's the other angle I think about this. This is very important too, because a lot of the conversation about political correctness gets a lot of blowback, especially from the right wing, right?
There is.
People are like, don't use blah, blah.
Or I'm going to go out of my way not to do this.
Don't use like, pronoun, blah.
I don't want to do extra work. I'm going to go out of my way to do extra work to not do the extra work.
I'm going
to
be deliberately incorrect about things.
All right.
And I mean, I can understand a lot of that. And I have some patience for it because, you know, it is a little bit, I think it's alienating to have like your entire society is like red shifting away from you. You know, it can feel, I think that red shift is from galaxies move away from each other. They turn red. Anyways, that was a little bit of a deep cut, but I can understand that. I think the political correctness stuff can be really like a small minority is going crazy about this political correctness stuff. And most people are actually kind of just slowly kind of getting into the know, which is like more realistic. But I think if you bring that same vehemence and accuracy that these political correct people bring to racial things and immigrant things and gender things, right, if you bring it into the wealth and poverty side of things, I think you actually very quickly find solidarity across political campaigns, across political groups. So, for example, if you say to rural maybe red state people in Kentucky who are, you know, dyed in the cloth Donald Trump and, you know, they vote for Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And you say, like, you know, their journalists start to say, yeah, the members of the precariat are doing this and the solariat do this and look at these divisions. They're going to, like, I think they're going to be able to see themselves in those terms and create class solidarity in the precariat and class solidarity in the solariat. There already is class solidarity, by the way, in the owners. The owners have class solidarity. They go to Davos. They know each other.
Right.
They're like, we're all the same. We're all the owners. But there isn't class solidarity in the precariat. They get divided up. They get told that, you know, they're right wing precariat, and then this is the left wing precariat. And so long as those groups don't understand that they actually all share the same class identity as being economically precariously positioned deliberately by the powerful members of society who've decided to make our society into this sort of precarious one shot society.
You better, anyone can succeed, but you better do it on your first try, or else
unless you're super rich, then you can have as many, or
you're very patient or very lucky and you want to wait for it to happen again.
So I think if we bring this kind of language and the correctness and the vehemence with which we push the stuff about race and gender, which I think is great because it's accurate and I think, you know, it has a lot of really good strengths. If we bring that same kind of vehemence to economic discussions and economic verbiage, I really wonder if that couldn't be a lot more. I think it could run like a flywheel that would like push things rather than be just like another sticking point.
Yeah. And it can be part of the messaging and be like, oh, the term poor is outdated. Just stop
it's outdated.
Using it.
That's stop. Wrong. Yeah. Just stop saying poor.
It's not good. It doesn't work well. It's outdated and it makes people
feel bad. And it's incorrect and it makes people feel bad. It's all the same things why you don't say illegal immigrant. Don't say illegal immigrant because it makes people feel bad. It's incorrect. It's wrong.
It's just a bad term. It doesn't function. It's old.
Just stop. Say undocumented, you know, or an undocumented person. Just say precariat. Just say solariat. Or I'm open to there being other words. I don't know. Maybe precariat, solariat sound too freaking weird to use. But let's come up with a better, correct language for how our society works and what actually are people's economic circumstances.
Let's draw more sensible divisions and ones that can be defined and not these vague things that don't really mean
anything.
It'll
let people make sense of their lives. It'll make people make sense better of society. And I think it'll create more class solidarity, which will lead to a more equitable and safer. When I say safe, I mean less precarious.
Yeah.
Safety should really be our goal, actually. Safety. That really should be the goal of, I think, all of society should be safety.
Well, precarious, I think of someone on the edge of something and they could fall off.
Yeah, not safe.
And that's not what you want people feeling safe.
Yeah,
you know?
Safety society. Let's do it. Let's build a safety society.
Yeah.
Safe for us emotionally, safe for us physically, safe for us economically.
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff. Thanks everybody for listening. I think we're going to wrap it up.
Yeah,
it's getting
pretty
dark here out on the.
This has been good. We're outside in a new spot and I feel like that's a nice sunset.
We just got to see the sunset. Yeah.
Very nice.
Well, for all of you out there in the precariat, the solariat, and those owners.
Thanks everyone.
Bless
for
your hearts. Bless your hearts.
Yep.
Everybody, one and all.
And until next time.
Take care.
Bye-bye.